a rich tradition. College Football Podcast is now live.
Hello and welcome to a rich tradition college football podcast. I'm Spencer Van Horn. He's Robbie Steltenpole. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Roberto, how are you, my friend?
Dude, I am doing great. I've got this weekend. Today is Saturday when we're recording. I've got Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday of kind of break, of summer break left, and then I go back to pre-planning on Wednesday. So, been playing a lot of golf this week, been remodeling our den. So yeah, everything's going really well. Just ready
to talk. Fantastic.
Ready to talk Big 12 tonight.
Are you really? Because the other day you said you pretty much hated the Big 12. So that, I was wanting to address that tonight.
Okay.
Why you hate the Big 12?
No, I think I'm bored with the storylines that people are creating in the Big 12. I'm tired of hearing about Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma. I'm tired of hearing Texas is back. I'm tired of hearing just all of these different narratives. And now from the on the field standpoint, X's and O's, it's probably one of the best conferences because you have no freaking idea who's actually going to win the conference.
Yeah.
But I'm just bored with I'm bored with talking season. I think that's what it is. I'm bored with talking season in the Big 12 because
There's not a lot of those are the only two national headlines from the conference. Obviously realignment, but then Texas and Oklahoma are really the only two other things. Baylor, Oklahoma State, that kind of falls underneath the radar a little bit because those programs don't stick around or don't stay in the spotlight like they could, and the other programs sort of do the same. So yeah, no, I can understand that. Makes sense.
Now, something we wanted to bring up from the Pac-12 that we didn't do, but we're going to do moving forward, and we'll just do this really quickly and then jump in, okay? From the Pac-12, huh?
I was just saying, okay.
Oh, okay, sorry. From the Pac-12, we have two categories for single teams. Most to prove and most to lose. Who has the most to prove going into the season in the Pac-12, and who, because of their record or because of falling short in some way, has the most to lose in the eyes, like, of the national media, national view, I guess.
So I think the team with the most to prove in the Pac-12, can I say David Shaw and Stanford? In the
sense that
maybe it's not the most to prove, but there's a lot on the line for David Shaw from a reputation standpoint. Like you've already mentioned that you've kind of lost faith in him a little bit. You've at least in terms of his time at Auburn, but Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think maybe that would be the spot for the most to prove could be David Shaw and Stanford, because it wasn't just but a few years ago that they were doing really well and sort of falling off a cliff. So, can David Shaw continue to do it?
Yeah, and I think just so you know, as far as Big 12 goes, I'm going to make this also. If you want to put a player or a coach, like, I think you're right. Like, if we don't even have to say Stanford. We can just say David Shaw, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most approved for me, Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Now, the team I was going to say was UCLA. But I think that was a great thought on your part. I think Bo Nix has most to prove.
You were
kind of lackluster you're kind of lackluster as a whole in the SEC, but you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to, like, be the face of a franchise, or be the face of a program that is not going to play Bama and Georgia every year. You have a cool opportunity here, and so I'm
even though you have to play Georgia one more time.
yeah, that
you go all the way across
that's
the country.
That's just bad.
Still have to play Georgia.
Yeah, Spencer, what about most to lose? Who has what team, coach, player has most to lose?
Kind of feels like I don't know if there's a clear answer to this in the Pac-12.
I have an answer, but it's kind of how to put this?
Ahead.
It's kind of petty. It's a little Tom up in here. Because for me it's Lincoln Riley.
What do you think he's got to lose this season?
Just credibility. He's not going to lose money. He's not going to lose players. He's not going to lose funding. He's not going to lose backing. It's going to be, but he will get made fun of, or there will be shots taken at him constantly throughout the year. Yeah. That's all I mean. I think Lincoln Riley is an incredible coach, an incredible play caller. I don't have a lot of negative to say about him outside of never really putting a huge foot forward when it came to defense and how he handled the traversal from Oklahoma to USC.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma or USC could certainly be an answer here. There's a lot of hype around here, but I guess you could go Utah as another answer here. I mean, if they lose that first game to Florida to start the year, that could be a big blow to their playoff opportunity. It might not be the nail in the coffin. I don't know if anybody could lose in week one and it be the nail in the coffin, but it could be a big blow, because what if USC stumbles a little bit and a win over the Trojans isn't as fancy, and Oregon stumbles once or twice and you get a win over them, but you also don't have a strong feature in the Pac-12 championship game, and then your resume is just not as enough, and that one loss to Florida hurts you a little bit or hurts you too much. But then just the idea that if they stumble a couple of times, sort of the opportunity that's out in front of them is so great, because while Lincoln Riley and USC is going to be really good again this year, you should be able to get them in that regular season game. You should be able to, you got a chance to go all the way. You got a chance at a playoff, so a mm-hmm. playoff spot. So, yeah, I think maybe Utah could be an answer there.
No, I think you're right. Okay. All right, enough of the Big 12. I mean, enough of the Pac-12. Spencer, I hate you, by the way. I just looked at the Google Doc. You changed my name. You changed the spelling of my name. I hate you.
Oh, boy.
All right, so just to recap, we have four tiers, folks. We have yep. tier one, which is the playoff teams that we think are playoff worthy. We have tier two, which is a championship contender. We have tier three, which is in the wings, like they are on the rise. They could possibly make a little run, or they are just kind of like, man, they could be really good, or they could kind of just be middling again. And then we have crap zone, or figuring it out, whichever one we want to call it. Basically,
I like to think mine's a little more optimistic sounding. Thank you very much.
Yes, yours is. they're still figuring things out for 13 years. Okay, so let's start this off. Let's go ahead and do spoiler alert, Spencer, for the listeners. Did you have any teams in the playoff tier from the Big 12?
Did not, but I do think that if something breaks right, if something clicks, if something...
Don't say the team yet, give me how many teams you think could be there if it breaks right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Potentially two, if it breaks right.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute, yeah.
Yeah, I guess if the number of teams I think it could break right for is about two of them.
Okay.
And maybe they could have a chance at the playoff if they go undefeated. If the competition around them is strong enough, they can maybe have an opportunity. I don't know if anybody's going undefeated in the Pac-12, which is the main reason why I don't think they'll have a playoff contender. I think nobody in the conference seems to be overwhelming, and therefore, everybody maybe has a slip up, that they could have at some point in the season, and that could leave them out of the playoff.
And you what know about what? You? I am right there with you. I have zero teams that I think from the Big 12 that I would bet on to make the playoff, or that I feel strongly have the talent to make the playoff, or the schedule either to make the playoff. But I agree with you that if the stars aligned, if some things went a couple of ways throughout the rest of the country, there are probably two teams who have the ability to do that. So let's go ahead and not waste any time. Let's jump into tier two, where you and I both have four teams, but we differ on one of those teams, which I'm very interested to hear what you have to say here.
Yeah, I'd like to know. I want you to start. I want you to explain West Virginia here, please and thank you.
Okay.
Explain yourself, sir.
Hold on. Let me press mute for a second because I think my son's coming to kiss me goodnight. Hold on.
Oh, how lovely is that? Kisses for daddy before he goes to bed. Sweet, sweet kisses from Elijah. Well, okay. This is a rich tradition.
Thank you. All right, we're here.
Okay, we're good.
All right. My son loves me.
Enough yeah. with the vamping.
We're good. Okay. I understand that everything that I'm about to say predicates on one simple thing, and that's JT Daniels staying healthy. Mm-hmm. So that is why in my championship Calip contender teams, West Virginia would be ranked fourth of these four, because I do think, even though I don't have them ranked, but I would rank them fourth because it all depends on something that I don't know 100% can happen. But when I look at their schedule, when I look at what they have coming into this year, they have talent returning. The offensive line returning is the biggest thing here, because I believe they're going to be a lot better than they were last year on the offensive line. They weren't great last year. I can't defend that, but I just think that they have an opportunity this year with a heavy load on the offensive line, and their defense is going to continue to be good. Their defense has been good since Neil Brown has gotten there. He has continued to recruit well on the defensive side of the ball. They play strong defense, okay? They were third in the passing defense last year in the Big 12. Yes, they were 39th overall, but I'm just talking about within the realm of their conference. I think that this West Virginia team has an opportunity to turn things around, to be a good year, to Neil Brown to step up and finally have a run, but it all depends on JT Daniels staying healthy, all of it. And I understand that. That is a high risk, but that's where I'm at.
So just to build on what you're talking about, JT would have to stay healthy, and some receivers are going to have to emerge as threats. It's not a highly thought of receiver group. They do have two guys coming back with 40 plus catches. So there is a starting point for West Virginia. And they've got what looks like a really nice talent in a guy named Tony Mathis at the running back spot. And as you mentioned, offensive line is at least one of the top groups in the Big 12 conference. Maybe not the top group, but it's in the top half. So if those things break right, if the defense continues to play well, maybe this isn't as far-fetched as I originally expected, but not a lot of people feel, if you're looking around the rest of, you know, preview season, magazine season, whatever you call it, you know, a lot of people have them finishing much further back than, you know, a championship contender. Maybe that those other pieces, those wide receiver pieces don't step up. Obviously, JT Daniels' health is a big question and always has been. So what does that look like from, you know, how does that actually play out for the upcoming season will be, like you said, a big feature here. But I'm also concerned who's he throwing the football to, who steps up and is able to maybe help keep them in some shootouts that they might have to get in. If Texas hits its stride and gets going offensively, if Oklahoma hits their stride and gets going offensively, with Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State, offense is always right around the corner. At least it seems it could be. So, yeah, how do they get into a shootout and win one of those if that's the case?
I'll say this and then we can move on. Yes, if you look at Sam James and Bryce Ford Wheaton, who are the two guys returning at wide receiver this year, no, they do not have a ton of yards. They have over 500 apiece. But if you look at the average of 12 and 13 yards a catch, that tells me that they love making big plays. And from the little time that we had with JT at, whether it's at USC or whether at Georgia, we know he likes to throw the deep ball. And so that's just kind of what I'm banking on. But anyway, let's move. Okay, so West Virginia. So you give me the team that replaces, I guess, my West Virginia for you.
Texas.
Okay.
I think obviously all of the conversation this offseason for Texas has been offense, offense, offense. Quinn Ewers, wide receiver group, Steve Sarkisian locking in. Benjamin Robinson, of course, is going to be a huge factor as well. Offensive line's got some improvements to do. They need to step up a young group that did well in the run game last year, but have got to do well in some other areas, pass protection areas themselves. But if that offense lives up to the hype and the defense does just a little bit better, if they just find a pulse, if they can do, you know, get 3-4 more points better than they were last year, that could be enough considering the offense that they have. They can get down to 27 points a game, 26 points a game. Again, not a great number, but not an awful number either. It's not 31.8 like it was, or 31.1 like it was last year. Plenty of things have to break right for Texas as well, but the things that could be breaking right, offensive line playing better, and Quinn Ewers stepping into his hype, the rest of the offense stepping into their hype, I think that could put this team in a position to be a championship contender for the Pac, the Big 12, considering what we've already stated, that nobody else in the conference is overwhelming. Baylor has its questions. Yeah. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, they'll have their questions as well.
I don't want to go back to West Virginia because I don't want to take up too much time. I just was going to say that their schedule is kind of favorable within the conference for them this year. When it comes to Texas, I'm probably too low on them, and I accept that, but I don't believe in their defense. They're only returning four players four starters from their defense last year that ranked eighth in scoring, eighth in rushing, and eighth in total. Yes, they're returning.
That's eighth in the conference, right?
Yeah, eighth in the conference. Oh, if it was eighth in the country, I'd have a different conversation.
Yeah, that's what I was wanting to clarify.
I'm looking also at the fact that they're going to have Bijan Robinson and Xavier Worthy. And if you don't know who Xavier Worthy is, folks, I'm telling you right now, you need to learn his name and you need to respect it, because that kid is so freaking good. And he's only a sophomore coming into this year. And he's also got there's just talent to throw to all over the place. And Texas last year, this not the one currently we're going through, but the recruiting class they had before it, they signed possibly the greatest offensive line class ever. So they've got some youth coming up. I think, though, that this is unfortunately going to be another growing year, another building year, and it's not until 2023 where Texas will be making their run and probably leaping from in the wing for me to playoff.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But this year, I think they are in the wing because the O-line is just not great. The defense, I don't expect it to be great. And I'm sorry, I don't believe in Hudson Card. I don't believe in Quinn Ewers because I haven't seen the kid play. So for me, it's kind of in the wing because I don't know enough to put them at championship contender. Because fair I just enough. Think but at the same time, I could be dead wrong. Sark could put this all together. All you need is a quarterback capable and Xavier Worthy and Bijan Robinson, and you're gonna score 35 you're gonna score 35 a game. But the defense can't give up as much as they gave up last year. They just can't. And
no, that side of the ball has to be an improvement if it's going to be championship contender season for them.
And look, I'm just looking at their schedule too. I'm talking about in conference. Okay. They got to go to Texas Tech. Of course, they have the Red River. They get West Virginia, Iowa State at home, but then they go back to back to at OK State and Kansas State. And then they go back to their biggest rival. And they go to Kansas this year. You know, how are you going to handle that? and then you finish.
Tough this, road game there.
Yeah, tough road game. They're going to want to make it 2-for-2. And then you play Baylor to end the season.
The schedule's definitely difficult.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you have anything to add there?
Still has their schedule 15th ranked in the country. Definitely difficult. You've got Alabama there. Alabama doesn't obviously count towards the Pac-12 or the Big 12 championship. Let's see how many more times we do that today.
Yeah.
Big 12 championship. Alabama won't count towards that. And if they can at least stay healthy through that ball game and again, hit the stride, I feel I feel confident that they could be in that championship picture by the end of the year.
No, I think that's good. I don't really have a lot more to say about Texas. I can't wait, though, to see how this goes, because I hope I'm wrong. Because just like with Florida, Miami, Notre Dame, USC, Michigan, any of these blue blood programs, when these teams are good, college football is better. And so I want them to be good. I just think we're a year away. So we'll see what happens. Spencer, for me, the next team I want to talk about in championship worthy, and I'm curious, like, because you may actually, I may be backtracking on this one by the end of the conversation, Oklahoma State.
Yeah, we have the, outside of Texas and West Virginia, we differ, but we're the same on Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma.
Yes, but
we have them in our championship tour tier.
Do you think we're too high on Oklahoma State?
We could be.
Because, and here, I'm sorry I'm sounding so negative today, but I'll be the negative here, you be the positive. You lose your defensive coordinator who literally changed your DNA on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. You bring in Derek Mason, who I believe is a great defensive coordinator. I'm not doubting him at all. I just don't know if he can turn things around in a year. Not to mention you lose eight starters from an elite level defense. Like, they were literally, everyone talked about Georgia. What was it? Georgia, Michigan, Oklahoma State. That's the way
people talk. And in some categories, it was Georgia and then Oklahoma State. Yeah. In some categories.
Yeah, absolutely. They were fifth. They were fifth nationally last year in total defense in the Big 12. And it was super impressive, but you lose your DC. You lose all that talent. And I've tried to be a defender of this kid since he was a freshman, but all he has done is show me if he can give the game away, he's going to. And that's Spencer Sanders.
Yeah, Spencer's not living up to that first name by any stretch of the imagination. And
he's not.
He's too turnover prone. If this team takes the step backwards and doesn't live up and is not part of the championship picture at the end of the year, it'll be the lost pieces on defense, and it'll be Spencer Sanders continuing to turn the football over. If they can find a way, if Mike Gundy can get back to maybe spreading things open four wide and attack the field that way, Sanders has seemingly played a little bit better in that system versus maybe the two tight end, the 13-14 personnel, is that what the technical terms are, and running the football, pounding it away with the tight ends and the fullback and such like they did last year. If they get away from that or kind of go back to maybe more of the spread, maybe that favors him a little bit more. They do lose their star running back from last year. So without him, perhaps the adjustment goes back to throwing the football all over the place. That was Jalen Warren that exited. Yeah. With 1200 yards last year. So as he leaves and the collection of talent is different, throw the ball a little bit more. Maybe that favors Sanders a little bit. He protects the ball. 12 interceptions through 13 games is not going to get it done. But if he can protect it a little bit more, 8 interceptions, 7 interceptions, if he can get it down to there, maybe that's enough to keep him there. You already mentioned Derek Mason. I think that could be a big key to losing those players as they exit. The players who do stay are edge, defensive line pressure guys, and that could be really benefit Derek Mason and what he likes to do and how he likes to attack. So
yep,
that might be the saving grace right there. And again, if you can get pressure on the quarterback and you can stop the run, that really helps that linebacking and even that secondary group as well. So tons of confidence in Derek Mason, and I'm going to give Spencer Sanders a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and predict that, or be hopeful that he cuts down on those interception numbers. That might be the less likely of the two things between he and Derek Mason, or the players leaving on defense.
Yeah, and the good thing is they have 3 weeks to start the year to get right before they go to Baylor October 1st to start Big 12 play. And then after
Central Michigan,
Arizona State, Arkansas, Pine Bluff.
So you get some opportunities.
And this has nothing to do with Gundy. I think Gundy is just in a situation where he lost his DC, which was one of the best hires he's made. and his quarterback that
Derek Mason's a good hire though too,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. No, I love Derek Mason. I am just trying to give a little grace to Derek Mason because he may need more than a year than one offseason to continue this. Because dude, they lost just so many guys from that defense. Like losing Malcolm Rodriguez was probably the biggest thing. I mean, he was essentially the Roquan Smith of that defense, you know? Like he was the guy for them. And that's where I'm at. All right, you start us off with the next team.
So we both agree on Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor feels like another team that if they're not careful, they might not be in the championship picture at the end of the year either. They're making a quarterback change from Gary Bohannon to Blake Shapen. Shapen did win and was impressive in some of their games last year when he had to fill in for Bohannon. He won in spring. The coaching staff went ahead and dubbed him the starter, so he'll go into fall camp kind of with the full reps in practice. So I like that idea, and obviously a lot of things are going to hinge on Shapen's shoulders. They too are losing a good little bit on the defensive side of the football as well. They do bring back their second leading tackler, though. That should go a long way. I like Baylor to stick around and be a part of this championship conversation again at the end of the year. A lot of it's because I feel like Dave Naranda might be one of those guys that's right around the corner from being, you know, one of the top guys in the country at the coaching position. They gave up 18 points a game last year. They bring back six of those defenders. If the drop-off is there and Dave Naranda can minimize it to 22 points a game or something, that could still go a long way for this Baylor team to be in a prime position this upcoming season to be right there in the thick of things. They do have some tough road games at Iowa State, at West Virginia, at Texas Tech, at Oklahoma, and at Texas. So that might be the biggest hurdle that they have is all of their tough games are on the road, and they've got to go to BYU as well. So everything on the road this year is going to be tough for Baylor.
Yeah, that for me is the concern. Mm-hmm. is the schedule and losing so much productivity on the offensive side of the ball. I don't doubt the defense, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't doubt the defense. I think it's going to be strong. I think it'll continue to be one of the top two or three defensive units in this conference. I think I'm in a situation though where I'm such a fan of Dave Aranda, of how he carries himself and how he does things, that I really want Baylor to do well. You know, like their Cinderella season last year didn't end in upset. They beat Ole Miss. They kind of handled Ole Miss in a lot of ways, you know? And they but when you're replacing Abram Smith, 1600 yard rusher, 12 touchdowns, Tyquan Thornton, and over close to 1,000-yard receiver, it does give me pause to thinking that this can just happen again, that they can just make another run like this. And that's why, like, even though everyone wants them to be in the playoff because of, you know, to carry over from last season's run, I don't think that can happen here because I think there's just too much attrition. And they, I just don't know where they're going to get the dudes to run and throw and get the productivity that they had last year. So I do think that they're a championship contender, but this Baylor team for me is not a playoff contender because of a mixture of their schedule and what they're losing offensively.
Yep, I agree.
I hate being obviously so negative, but.
Well, I mean, you know, it is what it is. This is what this is. I mean.
That's why we're doing it. Yep.
Call it like we see it kind of thing. So,
I'm not predicting it right now, but I'm saying they'll probably win the conference. But they'll probably win the conference with maybe three losses.
Yeah. So, I think offensively, you're correct. Obviously, it's a fact. You're losing. What is that? You're almost losing close to 2,500 yards on the ground and 14 touchdowns between the top two rushers from last year, and you carried it 5.4 yards a carry. You do bring back the majority of the offensive line, and if that group can continue to get the right kind of push, maybe that opens things up for not only the next guys coming in to run the ball successfully, but it also opens the opportunity for Blake Shapen to find Ben Sims, their tight end, and then Amani Winfield is a freshman who's highly ranked, going to be able to be on the field, and perhaps he can open up this passing game and step into that Tyquan Thornton spot. So again, if there's a lot, almost like with West Virginia, so as much crap as I've given you, I guess I have to go back on that. Baylor's in a similar position with as much as they lost offensively. Who's Blake Shapen going to be throwing the football to this season? That question remains to be seen. So this feels like a team that could fall back and not be a part of the championship picture at the end of the year. But if plenty of things break right, maybe they could be right there at the end of the season. I'm almost feeling like Baylor should be down in tier three for me now that we're sort of rehaving this conversation.
Yeah. So we both put together a list of four. One, we don't agree on one of the four.
Yeah, we've talked down.
And two of them, we've almost talked ourselves to the fact they should be tier yeah. three. Yeah. So let's talk about the last one, where I don't know if I'm going to be very positive either.
I'm the most confident here, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, then good. And I'm confident as well, too, that they're championship worthy. And that's the Oklahoma Sooners. I think that, well, I just love Dylan Gabriel. Like, I'm just a huge fan of him. I'm a fan of Jeff Lebby's type of offense, which Dylan Gabriel will prosper in. I think they return enough on the O-line. I think they return enough weapons on, you know, I think someone who people need to pay attention to is Javonte Barnes, the upcoming freshman running back for them. My concern is twofold, Spencer. It's the games they have on the road, and it's their defense, because they just lost so much across the board, whether to transfer or graduation. And then you look at their road, you look at their schedule, they play Kansas, or, well, first of all, at Nebraska, that's whatever kind of game you think it is, but I'm just talking about the attrition. At Nebraska, then they go to Kansas State, then they go at TCU, then it's Red River, then Kansas, then their bye week before Iowa State, which is cool, but then they play Baylor at West Virginia, then you have Bedlam, and then you finish at Texas Tech. I just think the way they're scheduled, like, that's just kind of been the thing here for the three of these last few teams. Their schedules are just really hard. And I think Oklahoma, yes, they're going to stomp UTEP. They're going to stomp Kent State. I don't know what that Nebraska game is going to be like, but I do know this. The following week with Kansas State, and we'll talk about them here in a minute, Kansas State's going to punch them in the mouth. Now, who knows who wins that game, but they're going to punch them in the mouth. And so, like, I am in no way, shape, or form my questioning the offensive talent that Oklahoma has, because the cupboard is not bare. And I think that the offensive coordinator and Jeff Lebby is really good. I am just concerned about the defensive talent and the transition to a Venables type defense. I don't know what they're going to be defensively. That's my enigma on Oklahoma. Assess.
So this is the team I'm most confident in being the most overwhelming. We've talked about every team mm-hmm. has their question marks and could have their slip ups and have their moments of not being overwhelming, like what Alabama tends to be, or the potential of, USC to potential, offensively be overwhelming. So Oklahoma's the one team I think has a chance to be overwhelming as a team. The ceiling that they've got, I think, can go a long way. Dylan Gabriel, Jeff Lebby, a great time that they had together in 2019 down at UCF. Jeff Lebby's been leading the Ole Miss offense the last 2 years. Pushing the football down the field works nicely for not only Marvin Mims, but there is another wide receiver that could be breaking out for Oklahoma this year. Jahlil Farouk could be on his way to breaking out here as well. So there's an embarrassment of riches on the offensive talent. The running game has been very good. Lots of people like to think a defensive coordinator is going to come in and want to, pound and ground on the, with the run game. So the opportunities to do that are there as well for for this Oklahoma team and Brent Venables. It is that defensive side of the football that would be the question. They did only give up 21.7 points per game in 2020. If they can get back to that, if Brent Venables can use the talent that they do have on this defense, some of the recruiting on that side of the ball has been better over the last couple of years of Lincoln Riley. If Brent Venables can tap into all of that, find the best way to put these pieces in a spot to succeed, there's no reason to believe he can't. So I like that side of the football. I feel comfortable with that side of the football and whose hands they are in with Brent Venables. So Dylan Gabriel, Jeff Lebby will handle the offense. Brent Venables will take care of things on defense. And I think Oklahoma's your champion at the end of the year. They, like you mentioned, they've got the Nebraska game. They've got a couple of tough road games as well within the conference and kind of how things match up, like you already went over. But I like Oklahoma at the top. I think they're the most complete team and the team that's most ready to kind of not have a slip up at some point this season.
Okay. I get behind that. I just think there's we didn't even mention this. First time head coach in Brent Venables.
Right. And he's one of those guys that, you know, was obviously around for a long time. I don't feel as weary of him being a first time head coach as you might be for Billy Napier at Florida. Even though Billy Napier's been a head coach before, he's now, you know, taking a step up to a bigger program with, you know, a much bigger situation to sit into. You feel a little bit better about Brent Venables to some degree, just because he's been around as long as he has, and he's been at the Power Five level as high as he has up to this point.
Yeah, I think you could be right. Oklahoma is probably the team with the most, I guess, the most approved. You know, I don't know. I don't even know how I classify them, because I think you're right that they are in a good spot. I think there are some things that could potentially be their kryptonite this year, but also at the same time, I don't think it, to your point, it may not matter because of how much offensive firepower they have. All right.
I think you're right about the most to prove, and especially from a fan base standpoint. I think Oklahoma, not only the fans, but just the program perception in general, has taken a gigantic hit with the whole Lincoln Riley thing of, you know, people don't typically leave blue blood programs for other blue blood programs. That was the stat that doesn't happen a lot. And this year it wound up happening twice, somebody leaving Notre Dame for LSU and somebody leaving Oklahoma for USC. You know, it was kind of a weird thing that happened, but Oklahoma and Notre Dame, I'm sure to some degree, take that stuff kind of personally, especially an Oklahoma when they were in the positions that they were in, you know, contending and being right there at the end of the year. So I do think they have the most to prove in a lot of different ways when it comes to this upcoming year.
Okay. Spencer, let's go to the team that you and I want to love. We want to love their coach greatly. But after last year's kind of disappointing season, we don't know really what they're going to be this year. And that's the Iowa State Cyclones. I have something
I can start with here if you'd like.
Yeah, because I'm going to be negative again. So
I think Kirby Smart mentioned something interesting at Media Days when he said experience sometimes can lead to complacency. And I'm wondering if there was a sense last year for Oklahoma or for Iowa State that because they had so much experience coming into the year, 11 starters on offense, 9 starters on defense. They had been so good the year before. They were about to step into another season. And even though in a lot of ways the stats didn't waver very much, and in some ways they were even better last year, they weren't able to get the wins. They weren't able to finish games. They weren't able to, you know, have the winning season that a lot of people were expecting them to have. They went 9-3 in 2020. A lot of people were expecting double digits in 2021, and 7-6 is what we got. And they had losses of 10. They had losses of, what is that, 2, 7, another 7-3. So, I mean, their 6 losses were really, really close last year. I'm wondering if there was a sense of this is our year that maybe got to Iowa State a little more than they wanted it to. And now that they're going to come into a season without that, and there's a little bit of, we're kind of back to being the underdogs, we're back to being brushed off the table, nobody's paying attention to us, I'm wondering if that's going to help them out. Even though they lose as much as they lose, they're returning 5 starters on offense and 3 on defense. So a lot of that major senior class that had so much success, they're on their way out. I'm wondering, though, if the people that have been in the system for a long time, Matt Campbell's in his 7th year, I'm wondering if those juniors who are now seniors and the now juniors this year, that upper class group, if they are, you know, if they're ready to sit back and say, okay, we've got something to prove. We failed our senior class last year. We've got something to prove. We're a little more dialed in, and maybe that complacency that came along with experience is a problem that they won't have this upcoming season.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. You kind of make me feel more positive about them. I don't mean that condescendingly at all. I mean that literally. I just look at what they're returning. I look at, man, is there a team that really just kind of made you go, like, made you exhale out loud than Iowa State last year? Like, they were just so frustrating to watch. Like, I wanted to be a Brock Purdy fan. I wanted to be a Breece Hall fan. You know, I wanted to like those guys, especially since they had been there for as long as they had. And it just did not come together. They lose to one of the most, I don't know a nice way to put this. They lose again to the one of the most one of the most skillless offenses in the country in Iowa last year.
Yeah. Turn the ball over, what, 4 or 5 times in that game?
Yeah, just so bad. Just so bad. And then you turn around and you look at their schedule this year. They play Iowa second week of the season. They have a very, very favorable schedule. Okay? Because they get Texas and Oklahoma State on the road, but they get Kansas State, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Baylor all at home. I'm sorry, they're on the road for Texas, Kansas, Oklahoma State. They have the rest at home. And like, I think those are good things. But man, when I look at what they're returning on offense and defense, it just, man, it really makes it hard for me to be excited for this team. But excuse me, you're absolutely right that just maybe what they needed was to be woken up and to be realized, like, nothing can be given to you. Like, no one cared about how many players you were returning last year. No one cared about, like, this or that. They cared about, hey, can you win games? And so, Spencer, I think I'm just a little bit more higher on them now because of you and looking and being reminded of their schedule. Like, maybe I think they, some things could roll a certain, they could roll their way, and they could make a run to the championship game. But I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. What do you think after my just word vomit there?
So Jahlil Brock ran 37 times last year for 4.7 yards. He, yep, and one of their top freshmen recruits from, I think, a year ago, Cartavius Norton, they could be the punch in the backfield that replaces Breece Hall. They had to replace somebody. They had to replace Breece Hall. I'm sorry. They used Breece Hall to replace the last really good running back that they had. They've kind of turned out several good running backs is the point I'm trying to make. Breece Hall is the latest. There's plenty of reason to believe that Matt Campbell can have an answer there. Xavier Hutchinson returns at the wide receiver spot. He caught 83 passes last year. They're going to need some other pieces to step up in those spots. Dimitri Stanley is a guy, a transfer from Colorado, 23 starts underneath his belt if he can help supplement that spot, that'll go a long way for the offensive side of the football. I think Matt Campbell's a guy we can trust to develop the people he's bringing in, and that last year was just one of those seasons that got the better of them. They weren't ready to have the target on their backs following a 9-3 season. Lots of hype, lots of expectations. They weren't ready for that. Now they can go back to everybody thinks we're going to finish middle of the pack or worse. And now they can go back to just, you know, building that way and having sort of a come from behind season again here in 2022. 7-6 last year. And like I said, their losses were the biggest loss they had was 27-17 to Iowa. 7 points, 2 points, 3 points, and 7 points again. They were right there last year. Could have been a completely different season last year had a couple of things gone differently. So yeah, a lot of those pieces are gone, yes, but I think Matt Campbell's done a good job recruiting. Hunter Deckers is the quarterback. He led a couple of touchdown drives last year, if I remember correctly. So they're in a good – they're in a hopeful spot at Iowa State, I think.
Okay, yeah. Would you put them close to the tier of you could see them in the championship game?
No, I feel pretty confident in my tier three that all of those teams, maybe TCU would be my closest tier three team to reaching tier two. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't feel great about anybody else. Because, I mean, hell, the conversation we were having about tier two, we were talking about moving some of those teams back, or I was talking about moving some of those teams back into tier three. So I feel pretty confident that my tier three is sort of set where they are with too many question marks.
Okay. All right, right on. All right, moving on to let's get this easier one out of the way first. Let's get TCU out of the way.
Okay.
Max Duggan's returning. I think he's a really good quarterback, for the Big 12 and for what TCU expects, I think he's a really good quarterback. They lose Zach Evans, who I think is about to have an incredible year at Ole Miss, but they and from everything we've been told, and I don't mean personally, but from like beat writers and people who know the Big 12, TCU stopped playing for Patterson last year. They stopped playing for him. Mm-hmm. And he stopped being motivating. They stopped hearing what he was saying. And so they bring in Sonny Dykes. I don't really expect much from this TCU team this year. I don't mean that in a mean way, but I think they have a lot returning on defense. So they have 7-7 returning on offense and defense. They could have a really good 5-7 year. But I just don't expect a lot from them.
So quarterback spot is up for grabs. Max Duggan and Chandler Morris will compete at that spot. Mm-hmm. And some people have Chandler Morris as the starter. You mentioned Zach Evans. He does exit, but the guy that was teamed up with him last year, Kendra Miller, I think is the name. Yeah, Kendra Miller, 7.5 yards per carry last year. So he actually was a little bit better on a yards per carry base from Zach Evans. So if that offensive line can continue to push, and it looks like they're going to return plenty of those guys up front, there's plenty of reason to believe that this offensive line will continue to push and play hard. Two capable guys at the quarterback spot, no matter who wins out in Chandler Morris and Max Duggan. Duggan, of course, has the experience on the field, but Morris maybe is a better passing option under the Sonny Dykes system that he's going to be bringing in. And they've got plenty of wide receivers. Quentin Johnston is 19 yards per catch. You want to talk about explosive, that's about as explosive as it can get. So there is plenty of opportunity here for TCU to, under a new head coach, really bounce back. Schedule's not overwhelming, especially from the out-of-conference standpoint. They do have a big trip starting October 29th. Got to go to West Virginia, got to go to Texas got to go to Baylor. Texas and Baylor in back-to-back weeks. There is a home game with Texas Tech on November 5th that kind of breaks up that road trip, but that'll be a big road test right there towards the end of the year. But TCU could have a lot of things figured out by that point. But TCU could be the team from Tier 3 that jumps into Tier 2 at the end of the year if the quarterback position is if they make the right choice at quarterback.
Yeah. No, I could see that. I think with TCU, I don't expect a whole lot, but I think it could be fun moving forward, right? I'm glad
Sonny. Go ahead.
I'm just gonna say I'm glad Sonny Dykes is getting a chance.
Yep. I think they've gotta convert yards into points this season. They had 196 yards on the ground, 240 yards through the air, 436 yards total offense. That's up from last year's 411, but they went backwards in terms of points, only 28.7. They had too many games this year where they were held under 20 points. They were beaten 29-17 to West Virginia, 31-12 to Kansas State. They only scored 17 against Oklahoma State, and they only scored 14 against Iowa State there at the end of the year. So a little more consistency on offense from a scoring standpoint and converting points or yards into points, that could go a long way for TCU this season.
No, I think that's good. Let's move to a team that I'm actually high on. I don't know. We haven't talked about this, so I don't know how you feel about this. But man, I'm actually kind of high on Kansas State this year.
I want to be high on Kansas State.
Yes. Like I think Deuce Vaughn and Adrian Martinez is about to be so fun to watch.
Yes. Adrian Martinez and Deuce Vaughn could be a really fun sort of a read option duo. Martinez has plenty of skills and ability running the football. I think 35 touchdowns on the ground for him. He's got 80 touchdowns in his career. I believe 50 of those are, or 35, 45, whatever the math is there. For scoring, he does well on the ground. If they can figure out a way, Chris Killeman and the offensive coordinator's name used to be a quarterback for them, Klein, I think is the last name, Colin Klein. If they can figure out how to pair those two successfully and get Adrian Martinez to be making simple, easy passes, he does have last year's top three receivers returning. One of those guys is Deuce Vaughn of those three, 49 catches last year. That's got to be tops in the country outside of Mississippi State. Deuce is great. This is going to depend how much and how successful Kansas State is this year depends on Adrian Martinez and the steps forward he can take. He's never really lived up, almost similar to Bo Nix, has never really been able to live up to some of the early hype that surrounded his name. If they can find a way to get him to be productive in through the air, pair him nicely with Deuce on the ground, this Kansas State team could be a lot of fun and big trouble for a lot of people. They were very good defensively last year. They had a huge jump defensively. It gave up 32 points a game in 2020, only 21 points a game last year, and won 8 games. So if they can make improvements, if Adrian Martinez can find a way to throw the football, Kansas State could be, I mean, I want to believe that could be a team that could be in the championship conversation as well. Adrian Martinez scares the poo out of me, though.
Yeah. He,
you don't know if he can throw the football and avoid those turnovers.
Well, I think one of the things is the step down in quality of defenses that he'll be playing, I think will be helpful. Do you fundamentally disagree with that sentiment?
Probably. I think the Big 12 has sort of taken a turn. I mean, Baylor, Iowa State, there's plenty of reason to believe TCU can make a bounce back. Obviously, Brent Venables. I think there's some defenses that they'll face this year that are
going
to be formidable groups.
I don't think I don't think that any defense he's playing against, though, is going to be like Michigan, Ohio State, or Wisconsin. I mean,
maybe not.
And I guess what I'm saying is, like, I wonder if a new environment, a new situation where, and as we know, if y'all didn't know, Colin Klein, if that name sounds familiar, he's a former quarterback for Kansas State. He has been brought in to be the new offensive coordinator for Kansas State, but he has been very vocal of wanting to run a more up-tempo Bill Snyder type of offense. And so I think that works to the benefit of Adrian Martinez. I think that can be very helpful for him. But to me, it's all about Deuce Vaughn. Like, get Deuce Vaughn the ball. The dude averaged 6 yards a carry and had 18 touchdowns. Like, that is awesome. And so coming into this year, I'm talking myself into it. I think they can compete for the title for the Big 12. I think they can. I really do. I really do think they can. I'm not saying they're going to, but I think they can. The tough part for them is their on the road schedule is all against big boys.
Yeah,
that's
at probably Oklahoma, at Iowa State, at Baylor, at TCU, at West Virginia.
They probably their projected schedule is 8-4, 5-4 within the conference. I think that probably sounds about right. But
yep.
I was gonna say, but if Adrian Martinez hits, if he clicks in this offense, and it all comes together, like that could change, right?
I think the other thing that's got to happen, somebody else needs to step up and help Deuce Vaughn. Obviously, Adrian mm-hmm. Martinez could do that on the ground potentially, but he had 284 touches last year, 235 on the ground and 49 through the air. And 22 total touchdowns, 18 on the ground and the 4 through the air. Got to find somebody else to help pick up the pace a little bit there and be a second option on this offense, particularly for Adrian Martinez to throw the football to, but also give somebody else an opportunity to sort of take some of the focus off of Deuce Vaughn.
No, I think that's fair. All right. Now for the team that I'm very confused by all the love that they are getting. And I think you know who I'm talking about because I don't know how you feel about this. But Texas Tech has been picked by a lot of people to possibly be a contender for this conference and to kind of knock some people off.
Who's picking that?
Bro, no, I'm not saying they've been picked to win the conference. I'm saying to compete for the conference. Like they... No. I have heard Athlon. I have heard Cover 3. I have heard the College Football Nerds all talk about how Tyler Shuck, isn't that how you say his name? Even though it's spelled weird.
Yeah, there's no K in there anywhere, yeah. But there's like a K or a T in his last name, and now that you've said it incorrectly, I can't think of the right way to say it.
Okay, well, I always mess up
names. I think it's Shuck or Shout, Shut.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right, so I always mess up names. I openly admit that, but...
No, in this case, I think you did, because I've had it right. Tyler Shuck, I think is right. We'll go with Shuck, and then if that's wrong, then we'll just be wrong.
All right, outside of Tyler...
Tyler, there you go.
And outside of Tyler and outside of Sarah Dorick Thompson and possibly Donovan Smith, whoever gets that starting quarterback job, who am I supposed to be excited about? Like, what am I supposed to be excited for with Texas Tech this year? They have a new head coach. Like, what am I supposed to be excited about?
Well, they do return all of their top rushers from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people got a lot of chances in Taj Brooks, Thompson, as you mentioned, Sherodrick Thompson, that got a lot of touches offensively, and then Xavier White and Donovan Smith, but he was the quarterback. So if those top two rushers coming back, 17 touchdowns between the two of them, 6.5 yards for Taj Brooks and 4.7 yards for Thompson. If that part of the offense can go a long way, and Tyler can be healthy. He ended up missing some time last year. So if they can be healthy at the quarterback spot, that could go a long way for Texas Tech this upcoming season. But I agree. I'm not sure what else has people thinking they're going to be right there in the thick of the conversation by the end of the year. They've lost all their receivers except for Miles Price, and he's more of a slot guy. So who's going to be the guys on the outside, being sort of bigger targets for Tyler? I'm not sure.
Nice alliteration.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. I just don't know what to say. Like, you know, Joe McGuire, like, why am I supposed to be excited about Joe McGuire as their head coach?
He's a high school man. He's got Texas Tech ties, baby. Not Texas Tech ties, but Texas high school ties. And that's what Texas Tech wants, because all the folks in Texas love for you to have Texas ties and Texas high school ties. Those are great ties to have because it's Texas high school football, and that's the greatest football in the history of the world. And if you're tied to Texas high school football and you coach at Texas Tech or one of the other Texas universities, that's right up our alley. That's you know how Michigan's all about Michigan man. Let's have a Michigan man. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of places in Texas that want to have a Texas man and Texas high school man. I don't mean to sound condescending, but
I think it's fanatical
about that.
Yeah, they very much freaking are.
Like the Marines down in Gitmo and a few good men, they're fanatical about being Marines. They're fanatical about being Texans in Texas.
And I love that movie. Okay. The other part, I will just say this, Zach Kittley, given a lot of credit for how many points and how many yards he was able to get Bailey Zappe to throw while at Western Kentucky.
Offensive coordinator.
Yeah, sorry. Offensive coordinator. I do believe that they're going to throw the ball a lot more back like they used to with Kingsbury and our boy.
Mike Leach.
But other than that, I have no idea why anyone's so high on them. All right, last team, and then we'll be done with this conference, Spencer. Kansas. I have nothing to say other than, hey, you got two wins last year. You beat Texas at Texas. Let's build on that, and let's try to get three wins. But let's look at your schedule. Can we find three wins on your schedule? Because, look, let's just be fair. They're probably not going to beat Texas again. All right, Texas Tech. Yes, you should win that game. At West Virginia, no. At Houston, no.
Duke. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
Tennessee Tech is the Friday night game. Yes, Tennessee Tech at the beginning of the year.
What did I say?
Continue. You said Texas Tech.
I'm an idiot. Sorry. It's late. Tennessee Tech, yes, you should win. West Virginia, no. At Houston, no. Duke, maybe. Iowa State,
Duke,
no.
I think, has to be the second win.
TCU, no. Oklahoma, no. Baylor, no. Oklahoma State, no. Texas Tech, no. Texas, no. Kansas State, no.
Texas Tech is the potential next third game.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair to them,
I think Texas Tech or West Virginia potentially would be the next third game. Potentially.
Yeah. Now, here's a positive. Here's a positive. They only lost to TCU by 3 and only lost to West Virginia by 5 last year or by 6 last year. So we see progression. They return 9 on offense. They return 7 on defense. I don't expect a lot from them. They are in the final tier, the trash tier, or the what was your more positive, more work to do?
Still figuring it out tier. Thank you very much. Lance Leopold is coming into his second season. They won 2 games last year. That was twice as many as they won the year before. There are things happening. If the experience can turn into production, there's reason to believe that they could get some production going. Jalen Daniels, or turn that production into wins. Jalen Daniels is the quarterback. He was a sophomore last year. He did some nice things, I believe, running the football. And when he had opportunities, about 117 attempts last year, that was some of those closer games at the end of the year. He was a part of the Texas win and a part of the 3-point loss to TCU and a part of the 34-28 loss to West Virginia at the end of the season. Jalen Daniels is the key to Lance Leopold and Kansas potentially getting that third win this upcoming season. There's obviously a lot of other things that have to break right, of course. But he will be a major key along with some of the leaders there on defense. Again, experience, though, has got to turn into production and has got to turn into playing better. You can't just – obviously, we've said it before, just because you have a lot of starters returning, if those starters were not good players, then, you know, that doesn't matter. So Lance has got to develop these guys into at least being smart and stingy kind of guys, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
No, I think that's good. I think you're right. I know I'm being flippant about them, but, like – I want to see more. Returning 9 on offense is a really big deal. And like you said, bringing in Jalen Daniels could be a big deal as well, and letting him kind of sling it around. Like people, I mean, Spencer, I don't think most of our listeners or people will remember, Kansas actually used to be quite the opponent in football. Do you remember those days?
Yeah, a little bit. They were a while back.
Yeah, it was a while
the
back.
Other, Well, the other thing I wanted to bring up, they went from 2.7 yards per carry to 3.8. That's a nice jump. A little over a yard better. If they can, again, make another jump there, that could be in a nice spot. They only gave up 16 sacks last year. Some of that might have been a lot of running the football, but getting the ball out of their hands quickly, they did a good job protecting the quarterback. Only the 16 sacks. So there are things to improve upon for Kansas, I think. And I like them to potentially get that third win and maybe give everybody else a little bit of a run for their money if they're not careful.
No, I agree. All right, so who's the team in the conference who has the most to lose?
I think Texas.
Right?
I think Texas is in a spot where...
That's really the only answer, right?
Yeah, it feels like it. Too much hype. Too much expectations. Quinn Ewers is not... He hasn't played a game yet, but he's... the number one, you know, overall recruit from his recruiting class. So there's no, maybe he'll have a minute or two at the beginning of the year to catch his breath, but ultimately he's got a lot on his shoulders. So he's going to have to step in and play really well if they can center, you know, those early parts of the season around Benjamin Robinson, then maybe that'll go a long way. But yeah, I mean, they've got the most to lose, because if they once again don't live up to all of the hype that's around their name, it'll put that much more pressure on Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, I think I don't know if Texas is the answer. I think Sark might be the answer, like you said. And it has nothing to really do. Like, he hasn't really done anything to upset people. It's the media. It's media projecting Texas to be this elite team again before they're ready. And, yep. You know, like, I'm actually more upset at Venables for his comments a couple days ago talking about, like, hey, we don't want you being – like, he's pulling a Clemson saying – because he thinks that he has the clout that Dabo does. Like, we don't want you committed to us and taking visits elsewhere. Okay, all right, that's fine, Venables, but does that mean that you're going to stop recruiting kids who are committed at other places? I mean, because you have flipped kids already. So where's the double standard there? But for me, it's Texas who has the most to lose as well. Spencer, what's your championship game pick here?
This is tough, because I think it'll be Oklahoma, and we've kind of talked backwards about a lot of our other championship tier kind of teams. I'm going to say Oklahoma and Baylor. I know we talked down a good little bit about Baylor, but Dave Naranda is the guy that he is. Yeah, give me Oklahoma and Baylor, but I don't necessarily love it. The conference could be cannibalizing itself, and Baylor or Oklahoma has the best chance to avoid that. But
that's the safest pick. I'll take it as well. I just don't know who else to pick. Like, because – if I went West Virginia, well, that Robbie, you're banking on JT Daniels, and I can't really do that. Robbie, Oklahoma State, I'm banking on Spencer Sanders. Can't really do that. Kansas State, I'm banking on Adrian Martinez. Oh, nope, can't do that. Like, you're better off picking Iowa State, who lost everybody, than you are probably any other team outside of Baylor and Oklahoma. You know, like on known quantities, I mean.
So, and Dave Naranda is my biggest piece for Baylor, and I think Blake Shapen will do his job. I think you could also have You know, if Mike Gundy figures it out, figures out an offensive set for Spencer Sanders, that could go a long way. Derek Mason. So I think Oklahoma State has a chance to be there, and that might even be the wiser pick. You said safer, but it might be the safer pick to go Oklahoma State. But you're right. Spencer Sanders is a toss-up. They are replacing a lot on offense at Baylor, so that kind of makes them, you know, an up-in-the-air pick. And we've already talked about Texas and their defense. It's hard to pin down who's going to be the next team there for Oklahoma to be facing in the Big 12 championship.
Yeah. All right, Spence. I'm picking Baylor and Oklahoma as well. And that is your Big 12.
I like Oklahoma to win it, by the way.
I'll take Oklahoma.
Love the enthusiasm.
Yeah,
love the enthusiasm.
I just don't know. Like I told you, I just don't know. This conference is so hard to feel confident in. I spent literally this whole time bashing almost every team in the conference because I just don't know. I just do not know what this conference is going to give me. So yeah, I'll pick Oklahoma to win it as well. Just too much offensive firepower.
Very good. Anything else?
No, man. We'll be turning around here soon, recording another episode, and getting these reviews because as of today, we are 4 weeks away from a Saturday's full of college football. Week zero. Ooh,
right around the corner.
That's right, buddy. I'm good, man.
All right, very good. Well, be sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. Find him on Twitter, SpiderDude64. I'm there, Spencer _ Van Horn, VanHorn. Again, like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. Later.